Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us today. Between the storms, it's a beautiful summer day. Makes us think of just why we love summer. Lazy days by the pools, afternoons at the park, flights to visit family, friends, take vacation. What could be better company than a good book? If it takes some doing to find time to get away this summer, don't waste your time reading something boring and predictable. From mysteries to historical novels to timely nonfiction penned by authors close to home and far away, this hour will give you plenty of titles to choose from. Our guests this hour have put together their favorite picks. Joining me in Studio A are Anne Berlin of the Ivy Bookshop and Deborah Taylor of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. Anne Berlin is co-owner of the Ivy Bookshop, an independent literary bookstore in Baltimore's Mount Washington neighborhood. Before she and her husband Ed took over the Ivy in 2012, Anne had a long career in the publishing industry. Anne, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here. And Deborah Taylor is coordinator for school and student services at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore. Last year, Deborah was awarded the Coretta Scott King Virginia Hamilton Practitioner Award for Lifetime Achievement by the American Library Association. Deborah, thanks for being here.
It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you. And when I think of summer reading, my first thought is I don't have time to do as much reading for fun as I would like. And my second thought is mysteries. I love mysteries, especially in the summer. So what would you suggest in that category? And Deborah, you had suggested Charcoal Joe.
Yeah, Walter Mosley is a real favorite in Baltimore. He's been here at the library a number of times, and his Easy Rollins mysteries are always fun, always intriguing, and always gritty. And so he has a new one out, a Charcoal Joe. And once again, Easy Rollins finds himself caught up in a lot of intrigue. He's supposed to be kind of settling down after the last episode, and he's hoping to marry his lady love. And, of course, things don't go quite the way he plans them to go. So we have, once again, Easy Rollins trying to solve a mystery. And it always has that overture because it's set in Los Angeles of an urban experience. So he has such a following, and people may not realize that there is another, it's actually the 14th Easy Rollins mystery that's coming out.
Right, and Mosley's won quite a few of the big awards in mystery writing.
He has won a lot of mystery writing awards. He's done other genres as well, but he always seems to come back, and he seems most comfortable in his Easy Rollins skin.
I didn't know until I read a review. I haven't had a chance to read this book, although it really sounds good. But I read a review. I didn't know Easy is the nickname for Ezekiel.
Yes. And it's so in keeping with his character that instead of having that formal name, he has this kind of street sounding Easy name, although his episodes are anything but easy.
Well, I think I'm going to try to make time for that book. What mystery would you suggest for us, Anne?
So I just loved Wild Lake by Laura Lippman, and I think you had Laura here on the show.
We did.
Previously.
We did. She was nice enough to come talk to us the day before the pub date. It was published May 3rd, I believe, and I think she actually came to talk to us the day before.
So people are always just, waiting breathlessly for Laura's next book. And I think, I have to say every book that I read of hers, they get better and better. This one, interestingly, takes place partially in Columbia, Maryland, where she grew up. So the plot...
It's mostly in Howard County. I mean,
It's Howard County.
It's really centered around Lou Brandt, the state's attorney in Howard County.
So Lou has become state's attorney, and in trying to kind of solidify her position, she's decided to take on this case where this homeless man has killed a woman. And as she starts looking into this, she begins to realize there's sort of some connections with her past. When she was a kid, her brother actually saved a friend's life right at high school graduation, but somebody else was killed during that time. And so the book sort of flips between her childhood in Columbia and then her present day, sort of looking into this case with this woman who was killed. It's a great read.
It is a great read. I second that. And Deborah Taylor, you're suggesting a Stephen King mystery.
Yeah, Stephen King never disappoints. And this particular mystery is actually the final of a trilogy. And he has this trilogy of this retired detective. And it's interesting because at the end of the second book, you think that villain has been vanquished. I mean, he's kind of in a vegetative state in some home somewhere. And then suddenly, somehow, he manages to regain his abilities. And he has the ability to cause all these people to commit suicide, including the partner of the main character, Bill Hodges. So it's really kind of intriguing. It brings in all of the elements that you love about Stephen King, which is all of the plot twists and all of the surprise. And it's also just a page-turner, and that's what you want in the summer.
Absolutely, that's what you want in the summer. I read that the previous book that you mentioned was also got good reviews, but it didn't sort of play into the supernatural elements that we sometimes think of with Stephen King. And this one seems
this
to
one
get
has
back to that.
Little elements of that, but it actually is something else that he is able to use to cause all of these people to take their own lives. So he's trying to head this off, Bill Hodges is. And it just really is so clever the way he kind of draws you in and you're thinking it's going to be something so supernatural, and then it's really quite human.
It sounds really good. and you brought us Redemption Road by John Hart. I don't know anything about that.
So John Hart is actually a favorite of my Macmillan rep, and he recommended him heartily to me. This book is really, really complicated. It's got a lot of different threads running in it. And it starts out with this woman, Elizabeth Black, who is a police officer, and she's just been suspended from the police force. She's gone in to save this young girl who's being serially raped, and there's like 19 bullet wounds in these two rapists, and the police force says, well, this is excessive. So at the same time, there's another police officer who has been in jail, who's been let out of jail. You have a crooked warden in this. You have you have a serial rapist, a serial killer. So you've got all these different things going on, and it's such a page-turner, but you have to have a little bit of a strong stomach for this one.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. That is Anne Berlin of the Ivy Bookshop here on Midday on WYPR. We're talking about summer reading. Also with us is Deborah Taylor, coordinator for school and student services at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore. They've both got lots of book suggestions, and we're interested in your book suggestions. Are you reading something that you want to share with others, is it a series that you have been sucked into that you'd like others to know about? You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. It's a small step, I think, from mysteries to thriller and suspense. Thriller and suspense category. In fact, I think a lot of people probably assume Stephen King belongs there. So, Deb, let me ask you what you would suggest in terms of a thriller or suspense.
Well, the Mirror Thief is getting, by Martin Say, is getting quite a lot of attention. It's interesting because I had knew nothing about the Venetian glass blowing industry or the glass making industry, and it becomes this great setting that starts in the 1500s when this technology has been perfected. And it's also the beginning of industrial espionage, because everyone wants to learn the techniques of doing this kind of glass and making sure that that these secrets aren't being stolen. So that's one aspect of the suspense part of it, is how do you keep these secrets, and how do you keep people who know these secrets kind of locked in to this small place where they're making this glass. And the story kind of goes across centuries. It picks up, we pick it up at a point in Los Angeles in the 40s. And we have another whole component to it, right up to kind of contemporary times in Las Vegas. So we get all these unique settings that are a part of this book, and this unique idea of industrial espionage that begins in the in the 1500s.
The only thing I know about The Mirror Thief, again, we're talking about The Mirror Thief by Martin Say, is I skimmed the New York Times review, which really focuses on the sprawling nature that
right.
you just gave us
right.
some idea. And the reviewer named Scarlett Thomas said, it's impossible to get through the novel without a dictionary, not a concise one. I recommend the Chambers app or the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, an atlas, and a permanent connection to Google. This is not a book to take on vacation without a good data roaming package. In other words, she thinks you're going to be looking up. In fact, she goes on to say she felt like a kid again because, like, every sentence she was looking something up.
Well, you know, some people go on vacation. They use that time when they're away from work, when they're away from so many other responsibilities, to find something to learn about something totally new. So that kind of book is perfect for that type of person, the person who wants to be immersed in something that they knew nothing about and have to look up different words or different places and imagine themselves somewhere else. So, you know, there we have both the person who goes on vacation and doesn't want to think, just want to read that plot and keep moving, and the person that likes to learn something new in the novels that they read.
Anne Berlin, you suggested a Baltimore writer in the thriller suspense category.
Right. So Dan Vesperman is a former reporter for the Baltimore Sun, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful writer. This book takes place in New York in 1942.
This book is called The Letter Writer.
The
Letter Writer by
Dan
Vesperman.
And the Normandy has been set on fire, and the rumor is that these are German espionage saboteurs that have...
The Normandy is an ocean liner.
It's a big ocean liner. So this policeman, whose name is Woodrow Kane, has moved from North Carolina for a variety of reasons. He's been given the task of investigating a dead body that was found in the Hudson. He, during the course of this investigation, he becomes friendly with a man named Danziger, who is a letter writer, and he speaks five languages, and he really keeps in touch with the immigrants in the Lower East Side, and he's writing letters to their families in Eastern Europe, and it becomes clear that he knows a lot more about what's going on than you would think, just because of all of these letters. This is a really complex story, and I was just thinking when Deb was talking, I wished when I started keeping a list of characters because he's got so many things going on. But this really, this novel leans heavily on events that involve the Mafia and the U.S. Department of Navy during World War II.
So it's not technically historical fiction, but it gives you a pretty good real sense. Of what some of the elements during World War II were.
Yeah, and it turns out there's a lot more in there that's real than you kind of realize until you sort of, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but until you get to the epilogue and you realize how much of this actually did happen.
We need to take a break, but before we do, since we're talking about that U-boat thing, there was another book that you wanted to flag for us that's sort of closer to home,
right.
Story about U-boats.
Yeah, so The Matthews Men is by William Giraud, and its subtitle is The Story of Seven Brothers and the War Against Hitler's U-boats. This, I had never focused so much on the U-boats. We don't think about that so much in World War II, and this is about the Merchant Marines, a whole community down in Matthews County, Virginia, who were merchant mariners, and during 1942 and part of 43, they were often on their own and being hunted by the U-boats and sunk one after another after another.
Yeah, that's history I didn't know. That's very interesting. And that is called The Matthews Men, The Story of Seven Brothers and the War Against Hitler's U-boats by William Giraud.
Yeah.
We should put these on our website because we're speeding through these books because they are so interesting. And listeners, I want to remind you, we're interested in what you're reading this summer. If you've got a title to recommend, new or old, send us an email at midday@wypr.org or give us a call at 410-662-8780. Tell us why it caught your eye and what you enjoyed about it. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. Looking to get lost in a book? I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about summer reading. If you want to get lost in a book, look no further. We're talking summer reading recommendations, thrillers, mysteries, memoirs, reimagined versions of Shakespeare's plays and Jane Austen novels. I'm joined this hour by two professional bookworms, Anne Berlin of the Ivy Bookshop and Deborah Taylor of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. And taking your reading suggestions at 410-662-8780 or by email midday@wypr.org. We got an email from Rodney, who says, I'm reading Carl Hoffman's Savage Harvest. It's a fantastic read you can't put down. It seeks to discover what became of Michael Rockefeller, who disappeared in the tribal areas of New Guinea around the 1960s. Thank you for the suggestion, Rodney. Have either of you heard of Savage Harvest?
We actually were selling that pretty well in the store. I haven't read it, but I know there's cannibalism involved. So if people are interested in cannibalism.
Well, Rodney, our listener Rodney, says it's a fantastic read you can't put down. So let's get back to some of your suggestions in fantasy. Deb Taylor, you suggested something called League of Dragons, a novel of Temeraire. So
yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, most fantasy readers like multiple volumes in their fantasy. And this is one, this is actually the ninth volume, the final volume of this whole series. And it's an alternate history. It takes place during the era of the Napoleonic Wars, and humans coexist with dragons. So it has something that you, if you really like your fantasy, both with war and with supernatural creatures, then you've got it in this book. And also many of the other volumes in the series have been likened to kind of adult fairy tales and things of that nature. So it's a slightly different take on fantasy that I think readers will enjoy.
Is it? I mean, I think of fairy tales from youth as that they were designed to give me messages as a young reader. You know, some morals, some truths to live by. Is that the kind of fairy tale we're talking about
here? I don't think so. I think what the writer has done has taken fairy tale tropes. You know, the whole idea of good over evil, those kinds of things, the conquering hero, the kinds of obstacles that the hero has to overcome, has incorporated those into telling the fantastic story. So it's not really seeking to teach you how to live, how to be the human person you need to be, but more taking those things that we remember from childhood fairy tales and incorporating them to make the plot and the story just move along so fast.
So that's The League of Dragons, a novel of Temeraire by Naomi Novik. And Anne Berlin, your suggestion in fantasy is a trilogy.
So this is The Passage Trilogy by Justin Cronin. I actually asked my staff if they had some books that they absolutely adored, and Annie Crosby recommended this one, so I have to admit I haven't read it. And she said, I said, well, tell me about it. And she said, well, it's about a small band of survivors tasked with rescuing humanity from a viral plague. She said, you know, if you just say this, it sounds kind of stupid. She said, but it's absolutely wonderful. She said, it's epic in scope, it's beautifully written, and it's just a wonderfully immersive experience. So
I think that's true of a lot of fantasies, isn't it? When you try to talk to somebody about it who has not experienced that imaginary world, because it's not just imaginary characters following a plot, like most fiction, a plot that you can actually imagine in the world. This is sort of beyond our ken. If you haven't gone there, it is going to sound preposterous.
That's true. I sort of felt that way about Bilbo Baggins when I first looked at The Hobbit, right?
Well, the best fantasy still has to do all of the things that good literary fiction does, and meaning that it has to have strong, fully crafted characters. It has to be a setting that you can believe in and that you're interested in. It has to have a storyline that will pull you along. So they have to do all of those things and still create these impossible worlds. So they have to have all of those components. So, but when you just tell the story, you're mostly just talking about the description of the world or the description of the circumstance, and you don't realize how much the writer engages you with character.
That is Deborah Taylor, coordinator for school and student services at the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, and also with me here in the studio is Anne Berlin, co-owner of the Ivy Bookshop, who's been part of the publishing industry for a long time. We're taking your calls at 410-662-8780 and your emails at midday@wypr.org. We're talking about great things to read this summer, and we're interested in what you're reading or what you would suggest. Anne is on the line from Baltimore. Anne, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. I'm actually from Delaware and was driving through Baltimore to do a puppy rescue mission in Washington, D.C. So I'm in the car, and I really appreciated Anne Berlin's suggestion. My suggestion is Look Again by Lisa Scottolini, and it's an older book. I think it was published in 2008, but it is about a single mother who, a journalist who has adopted a child and finds out that very early in the book that this child might not have been adopted legally, and it is just full of all kinds of different dynamics. There's a love interest. There's murder. It's quite incredible. And I stayed up until 2:45 a.m. this morning to listen to it.
Oh, my goodness. You were up till 3:45 and you're talking as you drive. So I'm going to let you go. But this is a novel, right? Look Again by Lisa.
I'm on Bluetooth.
Scottolini. And thanks for the suggestion. Are either of you familiar with that novel?
Not that particular one. I'm familiar with the author, and I know that she has a huge following, and that so I'm not surprised that would be a book that would work extremely well because she's very, very popular.
Okay, I'm glad to get that suggestion. Again, Look Again by Lisa Scottolini, S-C-O-T-T-O-L-I-N-E. If I'm mispronouncing it, that's how it's spelled. We were mentioning historical fiction a few minutes ago when we talked about Dan Vesperman's The Letter Writer. So let's talk about historical fiction. Deborah, you brought us a suggestion that pertains to early in the Republic.
Yes, America's First Daughter is a novel about Patsy Jefferson. And Patsy Jefferson is the daughter of Thomas Jefferson. And she saw so much of the world that her father was a part of. She was 10 years old when her mother died. And she becomes almost a companion to her father, going with him to Paris when he is trying to get the French help for the American Revolution, coming back to Monticello with him. And so it's a really interesting look at what the life of a woman of the American Revolutionary era would have been like, a woman of such an important man. And at an early, early age, she becomes the keeper of her father's legacy and the keeper of his secrets. And so all of the stories that we've heard about Thomas Jefferson lately, these are kind of woven through the plot line. Even his fights with Alexander Hamilton are woven through the plot line. So it's a really intriguing historical fiction. And the writers, there are actually two writers of the book, did a lot of research.
Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoy.
They did a lot of research. It's a great author's note at the back where they talk about where they took liberties, what they knew. And they use a lot of the letters of Thomas Jefferson between Thomas Jefferson and Patsy, as well as letters that Thomas Jefferson wrote to other people.
So I think many of us these days, when we think of Thomas Jefferson and women, we think of Sally Hemings.
She is a character in the story as
she
well.
She is.
But through Patsy's eyes.
Through Patsy's eyes.
Yes.
That sounds very intriguing. I'm not going to ask you to characterize it briefly here. But this historical fiction is called America's First Daughter. It's by Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoy. Thank you for that suggestion. And Anne Berlin, what historical fiction would you point us to?
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Marriage of Opposites by Alice Hoffman, who is just one of my favorite writers anyway. This is interestingly based on the mother of the painter, Camille Pissarro, who was the father of modern Impressionism. But it's really her story more than his story. Most of it takes place in St. Thomas in the 1800s in a very small community of Jews who've escaped the Inquisition. And Raquel is this very bright and rebellious girl.
St. Thomas in the
Caribbean.
In the Caribbean.
Yep. And Raquel is this very bright and somewhat rebellious girl who ends up in an arranged marriage because her father's business is in trouble. When her widower husband dies, the family in France sends Frederick, her husband's nephew, to settle the estate, and Raquel falls in love with Frederick. And in this community, that's considered incest, so it's quite exciting. And then sort of her son is born, her children are born, and
it the excitement that makes this such an appealing read to you, or
you know, I love being in an area that I really don't know anything about. I never knew there were Jews in the Caribbean, for one thing, and this whole community is really interesting to me. I like to read things that I don't know anything about when I start to read them, so I was sort of surprised halfway through to discover that this was the mother of Pissarro. And then her motivation and how she reacts to her son's rebelliousness after she was so rebellious herself is surprising.
Deborah Taylor, you have also brought us a suggestion for historical fiction that's someplace else. I'm thinking of Homegoing by, is it pronounced Ya Gyasi?
I think so, Ya Gyasi. And it's both away and in America. It's actually two kind of a parallel story that begins with two half-sisters in Ghana, and one of them is kind of sold to a British officer or British person who works in the slave trade, and the other comes to America, and their lineage or their descendants' stories are then told in a parallel way.
You know, this is Anne. I just want to say that this was one I said to Deb, I would have picked this one as well. I think we so often think of slavery in terms of the U.S. We rarely think of it in terms of the experiences of the Africans and how money corrupted the Africans as well as the Europeans. Because it's these small stories, I think you see people making different choices, some of them, you know, on both sides of the ocean. You know, sometimes they go one way and sometimes they go the other. It's an amazing book.
Yeah, and historical fiction can be a good window on giving us a new insight into things that maybe haven't been covered well in our history classes because the facts are hard to nail down.
And this writer is a writer who was Ghanaian and then came to America. So she has kind of her feet planted on both, you know, continents in a way from her own background. And so she's able to bring both of those experiences to the telling of this story.
And I'd just like to mention, I think she's 24 years old.
Yeah, she's really young.
And this author.
Yeah. And the book is on everybody's list. It's actually got two reviews in the New York Times. You know, when a book gets two reviews in the New York Times, they mean for you to know about it.
So that is Homegoing by Ya Gyasi. G-Y-A-S-I is her last name. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Jackie has called us from Towson with a suggestion. Jackie, welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you. Listen, I just finished this book last night, and I only picked it up by chance when I was at the library, and I think it is part of the Restoration Chronicles, but it does have to do with historical novels. It's called The Keepers of the Covenant. Now, it does, it tells you the story of Ezra and dealing with the Torah and their family life, it's not totally a religious book that you'd be turned off because you're not religious or anything like that, but it also involves, it takes the family through the struggles and how they grow and how they fight and how they struggle with their lives living under the Torah and living under, punishment for not obeying the Torah and things like that. It's a tremendous book, and if anybody would like a light read, it's not heavy, and a light read for summer, you'll go through it in no time at all. And it's also very informative about the Torah and understanding a little bit of it through Ezra's eyes.
So that is The Keepers of the Covenant by Lynn Austin.
Right.
Thank you for this suggestion, Jackie. We also got a suggestion by email from Kathleen. She suggests It's What I Do, A Photographer's Life of Love and War by Lindsay Addario, who worked as a photographer in Afghanistan and won a MacArthur Genius Grant, I think also a Pulitzer Prize. Kathleen writes, it's one of the most compelling books I've read this year. It's from 2015, so not new, but a great read. Her story reads like a movie that you cannot believe is real. So that's a suggestion of Kathleen. It's What I Do, A Photographer's Life of Love and War by Lindsay Addario. We've been talking about historical fiction, and you had another suggestion, Deb Taylor, by David Anthony Dunham.
Yeah, David Anthony Dunham actually went to the University of Maryland, so he's kind of got a local connection. I do believe he lives in Scotland now, so he's not as close as he once was. But he has written a novel called The Risen, a novel of Spartacus. And it's totally different from maybe the views that some of us from a certain age who remember Spartacus as Kirk Douglas. It's a different view of Spartacus. I was drawn to take a look at this first because I've read other things by this writer and I just love his writing, other historical fiction novels by him. He actually wrote a book about Hannibal, a novel of Carthage. So he really does delve deeply into the history. But I was drawn to this because it got a nice blurb from, is it G.R.R. Martin of the Game of Thrones fame. So I thought, whoa, let me take a look at this because, that's such a hot thing going on. So many people are watching right now. But it has enough of the violence and the adventure and action that I think fans of that series will also find that they might be intrigued by this novel of Spartacus.
The Risen, a novel of Spartacus by David Anthony Dunham of the alumnus of the University of Maryland. I did not know that. We need to take another quick break here. When we come back, more with our literary mavens, Anne Berlin and Deborah Taylor, and your suggestions. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Stephen King, Jacqueline Woodson, Sarah Vowell. We haven't gotten to her yet, but we will. Whether you are looking for something quirky and offbeat or a world you can get lost in, we've got recommendations of recent and upcoming titles by a variety of authors. I'm speaking with Anne Berlin of the Ivy Bookshop and Deborah Taylor of the Enoch Pratt Free Library about their favorite suggestions, and we're taking yours too. You can email us at midday@wypr.org if you're reading something you'd like others to know about, or you can call us at 410-662-8780. We've been talking mostly about fiction. Let's try to squeeze at least a little nonfiction in here. Anne Berlin, what would you suggest?
So Lafayette and the Somewhat United States by Sarah Vowell. I actually listened to this on CD, and she's a very charming reader. And this is the story of Lafayette and really how the Revolution would have been lost without him, his friendship with George Washington, how he managed to get money out of the French government. Sarah Vowell is just funny. She goes back and forth. One minute she's really in the middle of Valley Forge, and the next minute she's kind of with her nephew visiting historical Williamsburg and talking to the park rangers there. It's just fun, and you learn a lot.
So that's Sarah Vowell. Public radio listeners love Sarah Vowell. And her book, which is not out until October.
This was out last October.
Oh, last October.
That's my mistake. I'm sorry.
So it's out. You can listen by the pool right now. Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. It's an interesting title even. So that's nonfiction, although she makes it funny. Deb Taylor, what would you suggest in the nonfiction category?
Well, I'm still keeping in that Revolutionary War theme, Valiant Ambition by Nathaniel Philbrick. Nathaniel Philbrick is a really great nonfiction writer. One of his books was, turned into a movie last year. So this one is actually looking at the conflict between George Washington and Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold, you hear the name Benedict Arnold, and the only thing you know is traitor. But this lets you know that he was actually quite loyal to the American Revolution up until a point, and then what happened to turn him against the Revolution, and how he almost got away with it, almost got away with turning the secrets over to the British, which would have doomed the Americans' chances in the war. It lets you know that the American Revolution was not inevitable. The fact that they won was not inevitable, and that there was so much infighting makes today's dysfunction look like we see the seeds of it early on. There was just no one agreed with anything. It fell into petty quarrels and cynicism almost immediately during the period of the Revolution and the period right after the Revolution.
So that is Valiant Ambition by Nathaniel Philbrick. There's more fiction I want to get to, so I'm going to ask each of you to give us a short version of another book of nonfiction you've suggested. Anne Berlin, you've suggested Pandemic, Tracking Contagions from Cholera to Ebola by Sonia Shaw.
So Sonia Shaw is actually local as well. She's a science writer and a prize-winning author. And this book honestly reads like a thriller. I didn't think I wanted to read about pandemics. She hooked me in the preface. There's a lot of history in there, a lot about the cholera epidemics in the 1830s all over the world. And she covers, you know, why these happen, she even talks a bit about it's a little bit optimistic even about what can be done about them later on. It's absolutely fascinating.
Pandemic, Tracking Contagions from Cholera to Ebola by Sonia Shaw. And Deb Taylor, you've suggested In the Country We Love, My Family Divided by Diane Guerrero.
Yes, many people don't think they know anyone who has been affected by some of the issues with immigration. But this is an actress that many people have seen on Orange is the New Black and Jane the Virgin. And she actually came home from school one day. Her family was undocumented and her parents were deported and she was left behind. And it's the story of how she overcomes that aspect of her childhood and goes on to become a very successful actress, but she's always carrying the scars of that separation. And I also want to say that many of the books that I've talked about are available in audio. So if you have one of those long vacation drives, you can also listen as well as read.
Thank you for making that point. So the book you were just talking about, In the Country We Love, My
Yes.
Family Divided by Diane Guerrero. Paula is calling us from Baltimore with a book suggestion. Paula, welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hello, Paula. You're on the air.
All of a sudden, the volume went down. I couldn't hear you.
Paula, do you have a book suggestion?
Yes. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. I have a series that begins with Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, which is coming out in a movie sometime soon. And I just wanted to recommend that people read the book. This is officially a young adult novel, which I didn't realize when I read it. It's very, very well written, and it hooked me all the way through the three books of the series.
And the author is Jane Hegland.
No.
Oh.
That's the other one. I don't know the author for that one. I'm sorry. I'm in my car and I couldn't look it up.
Well, I appreciate your suggesting Mrs. Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Thank you. Thank you for that, Paula. Stephanie from Baltimore, what is your recommendation?
My recommendation was a memoir called Glitter and Glue. It's by Kelly Corrigan. And it's a really good, like, thoughtful memoir about a woman who is a nanny in Australia, and her experience helps her reconnect with her and realize all that she had given her all the years.
Stephanie, your call is kind of breaking up on us, so I'm going to let you go on Glitter and Gloom. On Glitter and Glue, a memoir by Kelly Corrigan. Thanks for this suggestion. And the suggestion that Paula made, Mrs. Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, was written by Ransom Riggs. R-I-G-G-S is the author on that one. We don't have as many minutes as I wish we had to talk about fiction here. So, Deborah Taylor, let me ask you what you want to highlight most.
Well, I absolutely would love to highlight the new novel by Louise Erdrich. She's a National Book Award winner. She has this really incredible, haunting story of tragedy and redemption. And it's two families. They're very close. And there is a tragic shooting that affects both of them and how they have to try to work through that and still remain as close as they were before. And it's also got how they draw on the strength and traditions of their Native American culture that's so much a part of who they are. So it's a great one.
That's called La Rose, novel.
La Rose, a novel by Louise Erdrich.
Okay. And you also had a suggestion by Jacqueline Woodson.
Jacqueline Woodson, that most people know as a children's and young adult author, she's coming out with her second adult novel. It's coming out in August. It's called Another Brooklyn. And it kind of goes into the difficulty of facing one's past and some of the things that happen for young women who have gone on to be somewhat successful, who had grown up together, and what happens when they are forced to face something that happened in their past.
Another Brooklyn by Jacqueline Woodson. And Anne Berlin, you brought me word that I didn't know that Anne Tyler, our own Anne Tyler from Baltimore, has another a book coming out.
It just came out yesterday. It's called Vinegar Girl, and it's part of the Hogarth Shakespeare series, whereby Random House has actually gotten famous authors to do retellings of a lot of very famous Shakespeare's plays. This one is the Taming of the Shrew. And it takes place in Baltimore. Kate Batista's father is a famous researcher at Hopkins, and he's got he has a researcher that he's really, really afraid is about to get deported. He's Russian, and his name is Pyotr Cherbukov. And this whole thing has got to do with Mr. Batista's attempts to keep Pyotr in the country by marrying him off to his daughter Kate. It's hysterical.
It sounds hysterical. And when I went to, since I, as I said, I didn't know that we were going to get treated this summer to another Anne Tyler book. So I went for a review, and I stumbled upon a video that the Washington Post book reviewer Ron Charles did, a very funny 2.5-minute video, not really so much about the book as who is the author of Anne Tyler's books, because she's so mysterious.
This is just wonderful. And I did listen to this one on audio, and it's great.
There was another work of fiction that you suggested, Anne Berlin.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about A Gentleman in Moscow, which is by Amor Towles, who is a really wonderful author. This is kind of interesting because it starts in 1922 when the Bolsheviks have won the revolution. Count Alexander Rostov has been found guilty of succumbing irrevocably to the corruption of his class for writing a poem. And rather than shoot him, they decide to put him under house arrest in the Metropole Hotel, which is this very swanky hotel right across from the Kremlin. And it's just, this man is just very, he's very smart, he's very resilient, and he creates his new life in the Metropole Hotel. And meanwhile, all these amazing events are going on around him. And if You know, I say if you love Tolstoy, you'll love him because it's kind of that wonderful Russian character.
And this is Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tolls. Amor Tolls. We have some suggestions by email. Joey from Baltimore writes, "My brother-in-law lent me his copy of World's End by T.C. Boyle. I was hooked immediately. The plot jumps back and forth between the 18th century and the 1960s, following the doomed fates of several Dutch immigrant families and several Native American tribes. Great characters, great portrayal of how we confront family legacy. Older book, but still fascinating." It sounds a bit like the historical fiction that you suggested to us, Deb Taylor.
Yeah, when you're reading in the summer, those family sagas really do kind of satisfy because they kind of take you away, sweep you through all of the human emotions. And what is more interesting than other people's families?
Anne Quinn writes us, a different Anne, "I would highly recommend The Big Green Tent by Ludmila Ulitskaya, translated from the Russian by Polly Gannon. It's an epic Russian novel covering the period from Stalin through the early 2000s, beginning with the story of three school friends branching out through families, co-workers, and friends. It's extremely readable. I learned a lot about Russians and what they've been through since the 1930s. So that's a suggestion from Anne for The Big Green Tent. And we got an email from Carter who suggests Stormy Weather by Carl Hiaasen. He's a South Florida writer and columnist. This book is a mashup of fantastical criminals and heroes making their way through a massive hurricane in South Florida. It's politically and ecologically driven." Lots of suggestions. Without suggesting another particular book, because I think we've probably put our listeners on overload, just any closing words for summer reading that either of you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I would encourage one of the nice things about summer reading in Baltimore is that families can do summer reading together at the Enoch Pratt Free Library. There's summer reading for children, for teens, for adults. So it's a great way to keep track of what you're reading, to get new reading suggestions, to find things that you can listen to if you're taking a family vacation in the car. So I would encourage people to connect with the Pratt Library for the summer.
And that sounds great. I just say, what is summer reading? I'm reading all the time, and I think, I'm guessing most of our listeners are too. So happy reading, and if you don't have time to read, as Deb said, listen on CDs. There's a lot of wonderful audios out there as well.
And as you said, all the time, the Ivy is having book events. Tomorrow you're having Laura Lippman, the author of Wild Lake, which we discussed, and crime writer Mark Billingham will be at the Ivy tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock to talk, I guess, about mysteries.
Yes.
I want to thank you both, Anne Berlin of the Ivy Bookshop. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
It was fun. It has been fun. Deborah Taylor of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. It's been great. Thank you
for having me.
We'll be sure to put this list of titles on the Midday Show page. And if you're looking for information about events at the Ivy or the Enoch Pratt Free Library, we'll link to their pages as well. And I want to thank you for listening and for your reading suggestions. Tune in tomorrow. We'll have news of the verdict in the trial of Officer Cesar Goodson, one of the officers accused in Freddie Gray's death. And we'll start the show discussing Judge Williams' verdict. And then we'll preview an unusual film festival that highlights industrial films, educational films, and home movies. I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you'll join us for that, and have a great afternoon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.